Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, it's Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. This is my Tech Guy podcast from Sunday, October 13th, 2013. Yes, all new material. This is episode 1022. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by OmniAlert. OmniAlert's mass notification platform allows you to instantly send text messages, emails, and more to your entire organization. For our two-week free trial and 20% off your first year of service, visit OmniAlert.com/TWiT and use the offer code TechGuy. And by LegalZoom.com. Go to LegalZoom.com for affordable legal solutions you can trust. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but you can get self-help services at your specific direction or speak to a legal plan attorney to get your questions answered and get ongoing advice. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TechGuy to get $10 off at checkout. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about, well, you know, tech, computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater. Our digital photography guru, Chris Marquardt, joins us halfway through the next hour to talk about photographic myths. He's our photographic myth buster. We might even have a review of our assignment. I hope you took some pictures illustrating loud 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to call the phone ranger, Heather Hammond, and say hello. You can get her to put you on the air. We'll answer your question. What else? The website, Tech Guy Labs. Well, you're playing with a new phone there, Heather Hammond.
Hello there.
Hello there. That is the next. So I'm Heather and I are talking about her next phone. She has an iPhone 4S, perfectly acceptable phone, but I think. What, your eye on the 5S, the new iPhone. The 5C, does that attract you? You're a colorful person. No? No. That's the ads. No, I was watching football this morning, and the ads, you know, they had an iPhone 5C ad, and it says, for colorful people, and they had all these, well, colorful people.
I think the C is for children.
That's what I think. For people under 25. All right. You're close, but not, I guess you've just passed that margin, so you no longer want a color phone. You want gold. That's what I got.
I know. Devices should be white or silver or something.
Or black.
Metal. Yeah, black.
These are, the gold one is subtle, and it's pretty, I think. Yeah, I think this is a good one. But in light of the big announcement from T-Mobile this week, that starting at the end of this month, they will offer free international roaming. And since you are a world traveler, free international roaming sounds attractive, doesn't it? Yes?
Oh, yeah. You never know when you're going to meet an Apollo, say, in Greece, and he wants to call you and hook up with you later that evening.
Hey, true Apollo. Really? His name was Apollo?
I know, right? How trite. It was gross. Anyway.
So, Apollo. So what I've lent you, just to test how T-Mobile works in the places you go. See, this is one of, nowadays, really, there are so many good phones out there. So many great choices. I don't think you should. It used to be when the iPhone came out, you really had to go with AT&T. But not anymore. Now you have lots of good choices. So maybe you want to choose the carrier that works best for you first, and then you can see what phones they have. Everybody has the iPhone. Everybody. But not everybody has all the other phones. This phone that you're holding is a Google phone. It's the Nexus 4, soon to be replaced. In fact, the rumor is day after tomorrow with the Nexus 5. That's why I don't mind lending you that.
I see.
But that's a T-Mobile phone. And so see how it works. Now, it doesn't support LTE on T-Mobile. Nexus 5 will. But it does, it'll give you a sense of how T-Mobile works at home and where you go around the, you know, your other jobs and so forth. And if you like it, I think T-Mobile now, because if you are a traveler and T-Mobile works well in your home and wherever you go, boy, that's a compelling argument. They also offer, they're the last company, I think, maybe Sprint does this too, that, you know, the also-rans offer unlimited data. Verizon and AT&T are phasing that out as fast as their little legs can carry them. So that's a good, I think that's a good choice. I think the iPhone 5 would be a good choice for you. I'm also holding in my hands for review purposes only, although I'm kind of tempted, this Note, the Galaxy Note 3. Now, I was a big fan of the Galaxy Note when it came out because it's the giant phone. We call them phablets, phone tablets. The Galaxy Note 2 had one of those, too. Loved it. And this Galaxy Note 3, which just came out, it's on AT&T, although I think other carriers are going to offer it as well, has a 5.5-inch 1080p screen. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous screen. And it's big. In fact, if I compare it to the iPhone 5, it's like twice as big. And it might look a little bit odd held up next to your head, depending on... Remember, we had a caller last show who said, well, I'm a big man, and it looks good in my hands. But I don't know. I don't know for you. You should try and see. Somebody's talking to me. Okay. Go away. Okay. My phones. Too many phones. I have 3 phones with me now. The other thing about the Note 3 that's kind of interesting is it also has this watch, the Galaxy Gear watch. And I was also watching on NFL about the Galaxy Gear. They're advertising it heavily on Fox on the football because they made Howie Long do a selfie. He said, what's a selfie?
From the wrist?
Yeah, but it's not that easy because the way the watch is oriented, the camera, as it probably should be, is pointed out, not towards you. Although I guess if you were a real selfie fanatic, you could turn the band around. But then the button's on the wrong side and have it pointed at you that way. And then you could take pictures of yourself all the time.
That thing looks incredible. I saw the ad popped up on YouTube. And
yeah, they're
like,
advertising
wow.
It like crazy. This is the one where the ad has Dick Tracy and everybody else who's ever had a phone watch.
The Jetsons. It's just great.
Apparently it's been in our culture, in our groupthink for years, for decades. We've always wanted such a thing.
We've wanted it, just like our jetpack, but at least we got this.
I think the jetpack's probably a bad idea. I'm not sure yet about the Galaxy Watch. I can guarantee you one thing. We're going to see every company, not just Samsung, but everybody's going to offer watches. This ties, and it needs to use the Note 3 right now, although eventually it'll tie to other Galaxy phones. It ties to the Note 3. It has a clock face, which is already superior to a regular wristwatch because it gives you time and weather. And you tap the weather and you get a weather forecast. That's kind of neat. It has a camera on it. It's pricey. It's $300. You add that to the phone, you're at $1,000 easy. And the other thing that it is unlike a wristwatch that I don't like, it goes dark because it's saving battery. So you have to tap it if you want to see what time it is. There's a button on the side. And that's, I could do that with a phone. It's also a little... Now, what do you think? For a woman, this is probably not going
to...
I'll
have to try it on. I do like
for
the look.
For a guy, it's okay. It's big. It's okay for a guy.
I always like big watches and stuff.
Yeah, this is really big. It's like wearing an iPod Nano on your wrist.
Not that that's a bad thing. So is it going to come in other colors?
That's a good question. It's a plastic band, and the band is integral to the watch, so you can't get your own high-quality Louis Vuitton band.
See, because I could see you buying, Lisa, one of those in, say, a champagne color.
Yeah, she wants the... I think she's ordered the iPhone 5S.
Oh, okay.
But you know what? Lisa's a funny duck. She's ordered it in black. She doesn't want the gold.
But she's all about black for everything, right?
And then I have to, that's right, she is. And then I have to put it in this, it's this cradle with a USB charger. That's how you charge it. And it goes a day or two. Now, so you're charging your watch every night. But I guess we'll get used to that. I'm sure all of the watches will do that. But camera, some apps... Changeable clock faces. It does rotate, which is nice. So, you can rotate the watch if you want to have it selfie focused. I don't know. This is not quite a category whose time has come, but it's getting there. Everybody's waiting to see what Apple does. And it's expected that in 2014, Apple will announce an iWatch. And if Apple is true to form, it will be the one to watch. But remember, Steve Jobs no longer with us, and so he was the guy who spearheaded all Apple's earlier wins, the iPhone, the iPod, the iPad. Can the new CEO at Apple, Tim Cook, can he recreate the gold that was Steve Jobs? We'll find out. They do have a big announcement, we believe. All the rumors are saying, although Apple's not yet, we'll know Tuesday. Apple will send out its invitation that traditionally 1 week before the event. We're expecting another Apple event. I know we just had the iPhone event, But what Apple does, or at least did last year, is has two, one in September for the iPhone and one in October for everything else. And so the rumor mill is strong. John Pachkowski, who writes for the Wall Street Journal and apparently has a very good inside track on the folks at Apple. My personal suspicion is he's the guy Apple leaks this stuff to. Apple isn't saying publicly, but John says October 22nd, Apple will have an iPad event, announce a new iPad, the big boy, and we're hoping an iPad mini with a very high-res display, and of course a new Mac Pro. All right, let's get to the phones. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside the U.S. or Canada, you could still call. Just use Skype or something like that. And call that toll-free number, and it won't cost you anything. 888-827-5536. Website techguylabs.com. That's got the phone number there. Also, audio and video from previous shows, notes on everything I say so you don't have to write anything down as you're driving around town. And you'll also find a link to our fine chat room wherein people help me answer questions, among other things. There's many things going on in that chat room. All of them family friendly because we have about 34 mods in there keeping track of everything and making booting out people who aren't nice. Heather Hammon, the phone ranger, taking the calls. Hello, Heather.
Hello.
Who should I talk to?
Beaming from space.
Hello. Well, she's playing with her phone. That's what's going on, aren't you?
I really want to talk to Larry in Monrovia. It's more about how can you help him help his friend.
Help me help you help him. Larry in Monrovia. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Leo. My friend, 89, he has no computer. He's completely computer illiterate, but he does have a telephone that he says there's a girl inside talking to him, so I'm assuming it's an iPhone.
There's a girl in my phone.
That gives you an idea how old I am, but anyway.
I don't know what kind of phone I have, but there's a girl in it.
That's right.
Wow.
Anyway, I would like to be able to forward emails to his telephone. I've tried just putting his phone number in. That doesn't work.
Well, okay. So what you need to know, yes, you can do this. Every phone company offers a special address that is the phone number via email. But you need to know what it is. So you got to, so who do you know who his carrier is?
Not really, no.
Yeah, that's the trick. You got to figure out who the carrier is, and then you can say, you know, Google email, say Verizon, and it will tell you how to send an email to a phone. You know, often it's the phone number at vzw.com, that kind of thing.
Ah,
do you see
okay.
what I'm saying? But unfortunately, there's no standard for this, so you have to figure out, you know, who his carrier is.
Okay, I can call him and find that out.
Yeah. 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 I mean, if he doesn't know what kind of phone he has, he may not know what his carrier is. But what you can often do, every phone from a carrier has the carrier logo somewhere on it.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
It'll say, if Verizon is notorious, Verizon puts it on every, you know, it says Verizon all over the phone. AT&T is sometimes a little more subtle. They'll have that little AT&T globe on the back of the phone.
Right.
If it's an iPhone, then it's not obvious because Apple has been so good at strong-arming the carriers that they've managed, even on a Verizon phone. Mine is a Verizon iPhone, and the only way you'd know is when you turn on the phone at the very tippity top of the phone, it will say the carrier's name. In fact, that's probably true on all smartphones. If he has a smartphone, is the carrier's name in small letters will be at the very, very top of the phone, of the
All right.
So once you figure that out, then Google it and you'll get the email address. What it is though, and I should explain this, is an SMS gateway. So the email will come to his phone not as email. I mean, he may have email. I'm not sure if he does or not, but it will come to his phone if he doesn't have email. When you do this technique, as a text message, is that, I take it that's what you want.
Yes.
Yeah. So don't make it really long, because it'll be a bunch of text messages. Text messages are limited to 160 characters.
Oh, no, well, but this could be like a movie or something.
Oh, a link, you mean?
Yeah,
a link. Yeah, yeah, if you send him a link, that's actually a great idea. You can email him a link. He'll come as a text message. He'll be able to click that link in the text message, and it will open up his if it's a smartphone, it'll open up the movie on a phone. That's a good idea. Yeah.
All right, great.
Yeah. So you just have to figure out who his carrier is, and then there. In fact, we'll put a link in the show notes. There's a Wikipedia page. If you go to Wikipedia, that says and search for carrier gateways, carrier SMS gateways. Somebody in the chat room put that in there. Thank you, chat room, as always. And if you go to that Wikipedia, we'll put the link in the show notes. It has for every carrier how you would email an SMS. Let's see. Who else here? Brian, Laguna Niguel, California. Hi, Brian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hi, Leo. I have a question regarding external hard drives.
Yes.
My greatest fear came to fruition yesterday when I had a hard drive, a Seagate Backup Plus 3 gigabyte or terabyte.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been placing media files on there, such as videos and music files, which are a little bit larger. And when I went to use it yesterday, the light came blinking on, and it started making an unusual noise.
And, like, that's not a good noise coming out of a hard drive.
It's not a good noise, yeah. And I was pretty surprised because we've only purchased this about maybe 6 months ago.
The thing about hard drives is there's no guarantee. Anything with moving parts, sometimes they'll fail right away. Sometimes they'll fail in a month, sometimes 6 months, sometimes 6 years. You're just unpredictable because it's moving parts.
So I wanted to ask you your recommendations on I've heard some people online saying that Seagate was not a good company.
Not so.
Okay.
All the hard drives now are what we call commodities. You know, like pork bellies are commodities. You don't ask, hey, who made that pork belly?
Okay.
It's a pork belly. It's a commodity in the sense that they're really basically all the same. You can make some, from time to time, for instance, Western Digital a couple of years ago had major firmware issues, and so I didn't recommend Western Digital drives, but they fixed that. They're effectively all the same.
Okay.
Hard drives will tend to either fail right away or not for a while.
Okay. So I guess I definitely like the idea of having a separate hard drive off to the side that I can use to put that stuff on.
It's a great idea, and everybody should have that.
But I wanted to kind of look one step further. Fortunately, this wasn't a hard drive that contained valuable information because I could replace media. But I, do have some documents that I would like to perhaps use an off-site source such as your Carbonite.
Right.
And I was looking at the different plans that they offered, and they have three different tiers. They have like the home tier. I think there's the home plus and the home premier.
Right.
And it looks like, what I kind of wanted to avoid losing information, such as video files, using one of these plans.
Okay, video files, I don't recommend using offsite backup for one simple reason. They're too big.
Okay.
What you can do is do a little calculation. What you want to figure out is what is the upstream bandwidth offered by your internet service provider, not downstream. You know, they always say the big number. You get 20 megabits per second down, but what do you get up? So that's the maximum. And, of course, Carbonite's not going to use a maximum because if they did, or any online backup did, you'd no longer have internet access. Okay. So they divide the maximum by half. So let's say it's a megabit. That means you're going to get 512 kilobits per second. Mm-hmm. And then divide the amount of data, and you'll say, it's going to take a year and a half to back that up. It's not practicable. Let me talk about a practical solution when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about backup, actually, with Rich in two... we lost him. He's gone. Okay. Here's a couple of concerns I had. He said something that worried me a little bit, and I hear this a lot. It's just a simple error, but people make this error. He said he was backing up to an external drive, all well and good, but then the drive failed, and fortunately, he didn't lose anything. Okay. So that told me something is wrong. So understand what a backup is. A backup is a second copy of something. And ideally, your best backup would be a second and third copy of something. So that if any of the drives fails, you're fine. Because you've got another copy or two somewhere else. If you back stuff up to a backup drive and then delete the original, of course, then if the backup drive dies, you're in trouble, right? That's not a backup. I think people think that if you put something on a thing named backup, then now you're backed up. You're not. A backup is a second or third or preferably both copy of something. So if you copy something to a backup drive and you delete the original, you no longer have a backup. You have one copy. So what if it's on a drive named backup? It's not a backup. Am I making sense here? You need to have more than one copy. And that's why it really doesn't matter so much if a backup drive, or shouldn't if a backup drive fails, because it's the backup drive. In fact, it shouldn't matter if you have a backup if the primary drive fails, because you've got a backup. The idea of backup, as Winster says in our chat room, and he's absolutely right, is to create redundancy. And the backup strategy I recommend is this thing that my friend Peter Krog created, 3-2-1 backup. Peter's a photographer. Of course, nobody cares more about this than photographers. Imagine you're a wedding photographer. You've got these beautiful pictures of the bride and groom, and then you lose them all. They're not going to restage the wedding, and you are going to be out of business. So photographers care a lot about backup. And his 3-2-1 backup is a very simple but very elegant way to understand backup. Three copies of anything you really care about. Those three copies should be on two forms of media. In other words, don't just trust hard drives. Maybe hard drive and DVD, or hard drive and USB key, or hard drive and cloud. In fact, that's the one. One of them should be off-site. And that's because if all the copies of everything are in the same spot, that's a vulnerability as well. Remember, we're planning for disaster. We're not planning for mild inconvenience. We're planning for the worst. So we're planning for lightning to strike that the computer and the hard drives next to it also all up in flames. And that's why you have one offsite. So three copies, not two, not one, but three copies of everything you want to save. Two different forms of media. And one of them should be off-site somewhere else. Now, that could mean that you back up to a local hard drive, which is always a good thing. That's convenient. I've got it there whenever I need it. That's kind of what we call nearline, or if the hard drive's plugged in all the time, it's online backup. It's always available. But that's not enough because we're sitting right next to the computer. So maybe burn a DVD and mail it to your mom, or put it in a safe deposit box or something like that. Then you're really good. Now, somebody's going to say, well, DVDs fail. That's right. But remember, you've got two other copies. What is the likelihood the DVD would be dead and the hard drive would be dead and the external hard drive would be dead? Well, unlikely. But again, you want to keep doing this, right? So you know, because it is possible that, and it happens, I'm sorry to say, a hard drive dies and then the corrupted data is copied to the near-term backup. Oh, no. And then you go to the safe deposit box and your DVD's dead. Oh, boy. That's why I do recommend Carbonite and other online backup solutions. But the other thing to understand is because it's online, that means you're using your internet bandwidth. And that is not infinite. That is a very constrained resource in most cases, upstream internet bandwidth. So don't be backing up terabytes. You're only backing up, I would say, no more than, say, 50 gigabytes of the most important stuff. That does not generally include video and may not include music and it may not include photos. For those, you need some extra solution. It's really documents. Nowadays, with the cloud, it's not unusual. I have copies everywhere of everything, right? Everything's always backed up to everywhere, so I'm not too worried. People lose computers. I've lost hard drives, but I know that I have copies of everything everywhere. But I'm very careful with my photos. So we traveled. We were on a vacation for 3 weeks. Took 1,600 photos. Even as I'm traveling, I'm taking them off the memory card, putting it on the computer, backing it up from the computer to an external drive. Now I've got three copies, memory card, computer, external drive, and then backing up that external drive to a second external drive. And when we went home, one of the backup, I've got the laptop in my carry-on, a backup in my carry-on, and another drive in my checked luggage. It's not perfect, but it's pretty good. And in fact, if you've got internet bandwidth, it would be an even better thing as you're traveling to every night pick the pictures you really care about and save them to Facebook or Flickr or SmugMug or Google Plus, wherever you like to save your photos. And that way, hey, even if you lost, you know, everything got lost, you'd have at least the photo album would still be there of the best pictures day by day. Okay, enough of that. Let's move on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Rich is in Tucson. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I haven't been listening to you forever, like some of your callers, but I started somewhere in the 800s, and this morning I listened to episode 974. So I'm hoping by the end of the year I'll be caught up.
I repeat a lot. If you listen to 200 episodes, you probably get all the good stuff.
Well, just yesterday I actually listened to the episode where Heather joined the team, and I thought, oh, this is great, because I used to listen to her and Dr. Dean for years.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
11 years with Dr. Dean Adele. We were so lucky to snag her.
We
just adore Heather.
And you together.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you. My wife is using a 7-year-old Dell laptop. It's an old work laptop that I had. And when her little laptop died, I gave that to her. Well, now, of course, 7 years later, that's getting pretty old.
Yeah.
She's really considering and kind of leaning towards getting a tablet at this point, getting an iPad. And I wanted your take on whether or not there are any downsides to having just a tablet as your only computing device.
Well, of course, it depends what you do. That's the obvious and generic answer. If you are writing a novel, a tablet is probably not ideal.
Yeah, no, it's mostly just your basics.
Yeah, if you're surfing the web and reading email, maybe a little light email response, then the tablet's, for most people, probably the best solution. If you are a casual gamer, a tablet's probably better. If you're a serious gamer, you're not going to play Call of Duty on a tablet. Actually, you can, but it's not going to be as good as Call of Duty on a desktop. So it really depends on what you do. I personally think for 90% of the way people use computers and 90% of computer users, a tablet is the right choice. It's more secure. It's more convenient. It's lighter, it's easier to carry, and it's less expensive. So you're saving money, too. I think a tablet's great. She's just doing email and web surfing?
Yeah, email, web surfing, some light document stuff. I figured we could probably get Pages, probably Numbers, if she's going to have any spreadsheets.
And, you know, people are, of course, pointing out that you can get a keyboard for an iPad. I use Logitech's Ultra thin tablet keyboard. It's a case and a keyboard, Bluetooth, and that actually is as good as probably any other keyboard. So if you do a lot of data entry, my friend Mike Elgin, who I referred to him the other day, he's for the last year and a half been without a man without a country. He and his wife, his kids were out of the house. He said, you know what, I could travel. And they sold their house, packed their stuff, and he's traveling around, and he does it with a iPad and one of these little external keyboards. He writes his column. He does everything he needs to do.
Well, wow, so, that's it.
I think a tablet is great. We're in. Okay. They say we're in a post-PC world, and that's why. So, yes, two thumbs up. Do wait until October 22nd to see what Apple's new tablets look like. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show brought to you by a brand new sponsor. It's OmniLert.com. OmniLert.com. In fact, if you go to OmniLert.com/twit, you can find out more about the company and get a special offer. What does OmniLert do? Well, they allow you to communicate with your clients, with your team, with your organization during emergency and other crisis situations. OmniLert was originally created for universities and colleges to communicate to students and parents via text message, via email, via the website, in the case of an emergency. But it's really grown much more beyond that. Now 15,000 organizations use OmniAlert, over 7.5 million people, for critical communications. It's cloud-based, so that's nice. You don't have to run a server. You don't have to do anything. In fact, you can use OmniAlert directly from your telephone or your tablet or your desktop. You can trigger simultaneous text messages, phone calls, emails, desktop alerts. You can set up conference calls that are automatically created, update web pages and social media, digital signage. Hospitals use OmniAlert for this, fire departments, other emergency services. Many universities and colleges use it to report campus crime or notify students in case of emergencies. Schools use it for things as simple as snow days or automated attendance calls. Our own Petaluma High School uses it here. Isn't that great? It can be used from any desktop or smartphone or tablet. It is completely secure. 2048-bit SSL EV certificates. It's easy to add users, let users opt in via text message. That's great. This is, you know, when sometimes these things happen, look at this, Bully Buster. I love this. This is one of their products. Isn't that great? We've got a bully here. It's a bully deterrent system that combines technology with psychology to decrease bullying and crime at school. These guys really, there's rained out. So if you're a football team, you can let your, or a baseball team or a soccer team, let your, or a little league team, let your team players and your attendees know, hey, we don't have a game today. It's rained out. Breaking news alerts. This is a really great solution. So you'll know if your network or company needs this. We use it here at Twit now. I'm really happy to have this. Great way to tell employees. We haven't had to use it, but if we had a power outage, to say, don't come into work today, that kind of thing. Or get in here. We've got to back up the SAN. Recognized as an industry leader by FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security for emergencies, for IT issues, for servers being down and more. American Red Cross uses it. UNICEF uses it. Pratt & Whitney, Philips, Mazda, Bayer, Cal Poly. 98% of OmniAlert customers renew every year because it is such a good service. It's hassle-free, 24/7 support. As low as $2 per user per month on the basic plan. You can find out more about plans at omnialert.com/twit. And if you want 20, you can get a 2-week risk-free trial, by the way. And for 20% off your first year of service, use the offer code TECHGUY. omnialert.com/twit. Offer code TECHGUY to save 20%. It's very cool. Our website, TechEyeLabs.com. That's the website if you want answers to your questions or want to recap. Bob is in Elmwood Park, New Jersey. Hello, Bob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Very good. Fellow amateur radio operator also. I love watching your show.
Thank you.
I've got a question for you. I have an iPad 2, and it's, you know, two-plus years old. I'm seeing a little bit of a decrease in the battery life, which I expect.
Yeah, 2 years is about... You know, all at lithium ion, you know this, I'm just going to say it for everybody else, all lithium ion batteries have a certain number of charges they can take, charge cycles, typically around 500. That means 500 times they can be fully charged and discharged. A partial charge is counts fractionally toward that. After 500 full charges, they don't take a charge anymore, and it's time. And unfortunately, with the iPad, you can't just open it up, put a new battery in.
No. So I'm really not worried about that too much, but what I am concerned about is I want to put the new iOS 7.02 in there, but I'm reading a lot of conflicting reports online of people saying that because it's a little bit more CPU intensive, that the battery life really suffers on like an iPad 2. And I'm wondering if you heard anything about
that. No, I haven't. That's not been my experience. I have it on an iPad mini, which is the equivalent of an iPad 2. It's roughly the same as an iPad 2, and I have not noticed any difference in battery life. I have put it on an iPad 3rd generation. Current generation is 4th, by the way. I put it on an iPad 3rd generation. Seems just fine, too. But now, if your battery life is already a little flaky, don't be surprised if it continues to decrease, because, as you know, you're at the end of the cycle. Apple will replace that battery, by the way. I think it's $90. They open it up, they put a new battery in.
Will they do that when I walk in, or they give you a rebuilt one, or how does it work?
That I don't know. Chat room, do you know? I've never done it before. I doubt they could do it in the store. So my guess is that they would take it, and you would get it back in a day or two, would be my guess. But I'm not sure. No, I don't think the new iOS affects the battery life appreciably. It is nice to get iOS 7 on there because more and more apps are going to be designed for it. I have some, there are some negatives on iOS 7, but in general, Apple pretty much pushes people towards that new OS pretty quickly. So you're going to have to go there sooner or later. Go for it, Bob. What happened? He just kind of automatically got taken off the air. I'm not sure what happened there.
He's just on hold.
Did you do that?
I might have.
Oh, by accident. I thought magic happened. Okay, Bob?
Thanks so much.
Hey, what's your call sign?
WA2SQQ.
WA2SQQ. This is W6TWT73.
Yeah. I got to work on the air. You get on HF at all?
I don't get it. I want to, but we. The problem is all my gear is here in the studio, which is so noisy that I have 20 dB of noise, so I can't. But yeah. I just bought a house in the country, and I'm always so excited. I'm going to put up a big antenna, and I'm going to get on HF. So I'll let you know. When I do, I'll let you know where I am.
Hey, thanks so much. We go way back to the screensaver days there. In fact,
thanks,
you came out to New Jersey once, and I got to meet you. So it was
Tom's fun. River. Yeah, I'll never forget that. That was fun with Patrick.
It was in a Gateway store, I think, in somewhere in Morris County.
Oh, really? We made several trips to Jersey, I think.
Yeah.
That's Patrick's old stomping grounds. He's from Long Beach Island, so we liked going out there.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Take care. Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Tristan, Pleasanton, California, just up the road a piece. What can I do for you, Tristan?
Hello, Leo.
Hey.
Hey, it's an honor to talk to you.
Oh, well, I'm just as honored to talk to you.
I just want to thank you for suggesting Ubuntu, and we upgraded our office to Ubuntu, and we're loving it.
Wow. What kind of work do you do?
We have a small product. And it's a perfect time for a shameless plug-in, if possible.
Shameless plug time. Go ahead.
It's organizer.com. It's a work bag. It's ergonomics and organizer.
Organizer. I love it.
Yeah. Anyway, my question being we're trying to upgrade our phone system here in terms of cell phone-wise.
Yeah.
And we have, both of us have an Android phone, but we're thinking about upgrading to a new iPhone.
Yeah.
And how does that work with Ubuntu? Because we can try it.
Oh, that's a good question. So let me explain what Ubuntu is, because people are going, he has Ubuntu? Ubuntu is a form of Linux, which is, you know, there's Windows, there's OS X. And then there's a third operating system commonly used on PCs called Linux, L-I-N-U-X. It's free. It's open source, which I like. That means you can modify it at your will. And it works really well on older hardware. It also is probably more secure, which is a good reason to use it in business. But if it's a little challenging because it's not Windows or OS X. And so, you know, hardware support and application support might be a little iffy. And I tell you, when it comes to the iPhone, Apple is bound, unfortunately, they have to support, what am I saying, unfortunately? Unfortunately, probably in their own minds, they have to support Windows users because there are more Windows users using iPhones than there are Apple users. But they don't have to support Linux. Linux is a small, small market. I don't know if that matters, frankly, because increasingly the iPhone is designed not to be connected to a computer. In the early days of the iPhone, you actually had to connect it to a computer just to activate it.
Oh, so you don't have to connect to the computer to upgrade or anything like that?
No, all of that stuff's done over the air now.
Oh, okay.
Via Wi-Fi or through your 3 or 4G network. So, I don't think it matters. I don't think that it's no longer, and this was a smart thing for Apple, it's no longer tied to a desktop.
I see.
So I wouldn't worry about it. Some apps, you know, what do you use? What apps do you use? What applications do you use on your desktops?
Just whatever it comes with, like a LibreOffice.
So you use Office apps? Okay. So, yeah, those will be compatible because you'll save out in doc form, you know, the Word format. And iWork stuff works all with standard Microsoft formats. I don't think you're having any problems at all. Music, you're going to use – there's no iTunes, obviously, on Ubuntu. That would be the biggest issue. But you can get it directly on the phone. You don't really need to connect to a desktop, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Leo.
You're welcome. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. I don't know if we have time to take a full call, but I'll tell you what. We'll start with Paul in Santa Monica and then go to the break if we have to. Hi, Paul.
Morning, Leo. As most callers, I have a problem.
Nobody ever calls to say how wonderful life is with their
kids. Right. I'm running Windows on a Vista operating system. Now, last week it was running great, but today I try to boot up, and it boots up to a crazy pattern.
Oh, that's not good. No right. Text, just like colors.
Right. Now, of course, none of my drives or anything will work. I can't get to that.
No. But what's gone wrong is hard to determine. It could, couple of possibilities. It could be the hard drive itself has gotten corrupted, and what's loading is, you know, not loading properly. But it sounds more like it might be a video issue. So that could either be a video driver that got damaged or the video card itself. Is it a laptop?
Yes, it's a laptop, but this is what I thought, Leo, except that I can go into a safe mode, get all my icons for the desktop, and do anything.
That means it's the video driver. So go into safe mode, reinstall the video driver. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and we're talking high tech. Computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. We ran out of time when I was talking to Paul, but I just want to kind of reiterate what I said. Paul, this is a very good, and Paul did the right thing. This is a very good example of why you have safe mode on Windows. When you first boot up Windows, if you hold down the shift key, on older computers it was the F8 key, but now it's a shift key, as you're booting up, Windows will go. Will give you a menu. They'll give you a boot menu, and one of the choices is safe mode. There's safe mode with networking, safe mode. Generally, you want to pick safe mode with networking. What that does is it loads a minimum set of drivers. It doesn't load all of that software that runs in the background and makes it a very simple boot up. Now, the screen's going to look terrible. 640 by 480, 16 colors. It doesn't look, because it loads a generic video driver and all of that. But if you're having this, as Paul did, weird, you know, tapestry effect on Windows when you boot up, and you can hold down the shift key, reboot, and go into safe mode. He was smart enough to do that, and he said everything's fine. Good news. That tells us that whatever is not loading in safe mode but is loading in regular mode, one of those things is going to cause the problem. And since it is a video issue, it sure sounds like it's probably the video driver for the video card. Now, it could be more complicated. It could be, for instance, that there's something gone wrong with the hardware on the video card, and it can handle a very simple mode, but it can't handle a more complicated mode. There could be more to it, but the first thing, the easiest thing, and the thing that's probably going to fix it, is just getting an updated video driver and reinstalling. And you can do that in safe mode. So go to the website for the company that made the video card, or the company that made the motherboard, or the company that made the computer. Since it's a laptop, probably it's the last of those. Download the driver, reinstall the driver, and that usually will fix the problem. If it doesn't, there may be something more serious wrong. You know, some of the video memory is corrupted or something like that. And if it is hardware, well, on a laptop, that's just not fixable. It's a pretty old system. Running Windows Vista, Paul, so it's likely, you know, it is possible that more has gone wrong on that. So now they're saying F8 still works to get into safe mode. I always say F8, because a lot of people will say, what is F8? Function key 8. So holding down the shift key, I think that's why Microsoft changed it to holding down the shift key, but apparently both still work. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. And Michelle in Palos Verdes, California. Hey, Michelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, nice to be talking with you, Leo.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
Well, in the summer, I lost my Verizon account because we changed providers from Verizon to Cox. And that was an upsetting experience, but I usually use Gmail.
You fell for the triple play, did you? Yeah. So, the cable companies love that because then they get you for internet, for television, and for telephone.
Well, we went with them for internet security and telephone, which is fine because we kept our DirecTV, which we find.
Oh, interesting. Huh. Okay. Yeah. They're going to continue to work on you. That means there's more room for revenue growth with you.
Well, it's amazing what you can get when you go to the retention department.
Ah, yes. Isn't that smart? I'm sorry, we're unhappy with your service. We're going to cancel you. Oh, wait, don't do that, Michelle. Let us make you an offer.
Well, good. My problem is that yesterday I opened my phone, my iPhone, and went to Gmail, and it said, your inbox has no mail in it.
Your inbox has no what?
No mail.
Your inbox is empty on your Gmail.
Right. And my inbox was not empty because I keep things there like...
Right.
airline reservations that are coming up shortly or emails I haven't
Did you did you update your iPhone to iOS 7?
Yes, some time ago.
Okay, I wonder if that's related.
How do I get my mail back?
Okay, sure. so one thing that has changed, and I think this might be the issue, is the way you connect Google to your iPhone. It used to be the best way to do it was to use Exchange, to treat it as an Exchange server, but Google has deprecated the Exchange Active Sync. And so now the best way to do it is to sign up for a Google account. So here's what I would do, and I think this will fix it, is delete that email account from your phone. Okay?
Okay.
And then go back in and recreate it, but you know where it says mail contacts in the settings, add a new mail account, but make sure you use Google as the provider. In the past, we have recommended, and Google even has recommended, using Exchange as the provider, but that no longer works right. Apple and everybody else wants you to use Google directly.
I will try that.
Yeah.
However, on my computer, there is no mail on my inbox.
Oh,
my inbox.
Well, that's another... Oh, that's not good.
Mail comes in. If my husband sends me a mail, or I got a couple...
Oh, but no new mail. When you go on your browser to your Gmail account, you don't see any mail in the inbox?
Right.
And the reason you mentioned Cox is because Cox set up the account for you?
No. The reason I mentioned Cox is because we changed providers.
But that shouldn't affect your iPhone, obviously.
No. And I wanted to have... My question is, if Gmail is going to do this to me, is there another?
No, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. Gmail's not. I don't know what's doing this to you, but it ain't Gmail.
Okay, good.
I'm wondering, you didn't set up a filter to archive mail or?
No.
That's bizarre. So you go to gmail.com on your computer and your inbox is empty.
Right. New mail will come in, but the mail I had there is gone.
Look in the archive folder. Did you?
No.
There is a folder, I don't know what they call it, but there's a, I think it's a folder that's called archive. See if it's there. Okay. I hope your Gmail hasn't been hacked.
How do I know that?
Well, that would be a sign. I mean, you there's nothing you could normally do to have everything deleted from email. And, you know, without your permission.
All of my folders are still there.
All your folders are still there. Good. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good sign.
Right.
But your inbox folder, I'm looking at my inbox folder, 32,451 messages. That's how it is normally in Gmail because it doesn't delete anything unless you ask it to. Make sure you're on the inbox.
Yeah. I try and keep my emails down to 25 so that they're manageable.
How do you do that?
I put them into file.
Okay. So you sort them and delete them.
Right. But I keep the ones that I want to address going forward.
I'm not sure what's going on here. Does Cox manage your Gmail account or?
No.
You had it before Cox.
Right. My inbox does look different. It says... Binary.
Yeah. They've changed that, and that may be one of the things. Make sure that so there is now some automated filtering on Gmail. They've got these new folders: primary, social, promotions, updates. It may, and these are automatic. You don't have to set up a filter to do this. It's pretty smart, but it may be that's what's going on. You can disable that. That's in the settings. You can turn off those new folders if they're confusing you.
I went to inbox on my settings, and I don't see where the choice is to disable this.
Look, I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on. You've browsed around in your Gmail, and you, it's under settings. It's under configure inbox, I think. Yeah, it's so. There's the gear on Gmail.
Yep.
And you go not to settings, but there's above it. There's something called configure inbox. And you can uncheck all of these new inboxes.
Uh-huh.
It might be that. I don't think there's a serious problem here, but I'm not, it's hard for me to tell. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So we've been going back and forth over Michelle's issue in the chat room. Great folks in the chat room with lots of great suggestions for why Michelle's Gmail archives might have disappeared. When messages go, now this is from Gmail, so this is interesting. We'll put a link to this in the show notes, to a Gmail help ticket that says, my messages have gone missing. The quick answer, when messages go missing in a Gmail account, it's typically due to one of the following: a configuration issue with IMAP or POP access, settings applied to incoming mail, such as filtering or forwarding, deliberate or accidental human action, or possibly a compromised account. So, Michelle, we'll put a link in the show notes at Tech Guy Labs to this tip. One of the things they say to do is to search. So if you don't see a message you know you saved, the search in Gmail up at the top there is across all messages. So if you do a search for a message you should have but can't see, and it pops up, it'll tell you where it is, and that might give you some idea of where it's gone. There's also in Gmail, and this is really nice, a folder called All Mail. Usually, or at least in my Gmail, it's hidden behind the More button at the bottom of all those folders. There's one called All Mail. That is everything unsorted, but it will show you the various sorting that's happened to it. And that might help. You might say, oh, I see, everything's been put somewhere. But if you go to All Mail and it's blank, then one more thing to consider is maybe you set up an email program to download everything from Google and delete it. POP3 lets you, that's that setting in POP3 Mail, to delete mail from server. You really don't want that. And it's possible that did that. And the final thing, the compromise thing, is something to be concerned about. And there's a nice feature of Gmail that I would pay attention to. It's at the very bottom of the page on Gmail. You go all the way down to the bottom of your Gmail folder, your inbox, and you'll see something that says last account activity. And it'll say when the last account activity was, but there's a link below it called details. Oh, is this great? This shows you all of the different places your Gmail's been accessed from. This is, Google really does this right. So it'll show you what's accessed your Gmail. And if any of these doesn't look right, well, that could be a bad guy. I have to tell you, when your Gmail gets compromised, generally the first thing they do is change your password so that you can't do this. But this will also give you a diagnostic, because if you see POP3 as one of the access types, that, that might be the culprit there. It'll give you the IP addresses and the city or state that it came from. That's going to help you back some of this stuff down and figure out what did this come from? Where was I accessed from? It also will show you any applications you've authorized. For instance, I use a website called TripIt that automatically scans my Google Mail for travel confirmation emails and then adds them to an itinerary. I asked it to do that. TripIt shows up as an authorized application in there. So again, scroll to the very bottom of your Gmail inbox and where it says account activity, click that details link. And that is really useful. That'll really tell you, where it was accessed from last. And if anything looks odd, then I'd be a little aware of that. There's something going on there. There's even further details on this. You can see more about what kind of computer and so forth accessed it. The NSA does not show up. Just take that as given. Let's go to Oslo, Norway. Svera is on the line. Hi, Svera.
Hey, Lou. Can you hear me?
I can. Welcome.
I know I'm a little muddy. I called once before, and I heard the recording. So
no, this sure. Sounds quite good, actually. This is very good. Okay. Are you using Skype?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm calling
great.
From Oslo, Norway. I'm sorry, I almost fell asleep here waiting.
I'm sorry. I know. What time is it in Oslo?
It's about 9:30.
Oh, all right. Late in the evening.
No, but I called a few months back about web TV, and I was thinking about setting up a show. Now I have. At that time, I asked about using a DSLR as a camera. You said it wouldn't work. I said it might work, and then it didn't work. So I'm using your solution now. Cheap, simple cameras.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess that's the best solution. But now it's more on production and mixing, and I'm kind of envious on your Skypeosaurus.
Oh, we are totally over the top in everything that we do. Because we've been doing it for 8 years, slowly building a television network for the internet.
Yeah, I'm looking at your equipment list on the wiki.
Yeah,
and it's quite daunting. No, my question is, I use Google Hangouts now. I don't know. I think you met Howard Linson.
Yes, runs, I know Howard. Yeah,
me and Howard do a show every week on the Fridays. We call it Stocks and Scotch. You can guess kind of what it's about.
Stocks and scotch, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, and mostly it's talk about scotch and sip some, talk about stocks and sip some scotch.
How but fun! Like, what a great idea for a show. That's on Howard's that's on Howard's network.
Well, we do it now sort of on no network, so we might look to make it like more professional. We just started doing it, so we chose the one thing that we knew would work, and it's Google Hangouts on air.
Hangouts are a great solution. If you have Hangouts on air, not only do you have this video calling all done for you, but then it saves it out to YouTube automatically.
Yeah, in theory, it's great, but in practice, it's less than great.
Notice we don't use it.
Yeah, and I can guess that there's two reasons to not use it, and it's basically you have to tell people to use or how to use Google Plus.
Right.
Nobody's on Google Plus, so and nobody knows. Maybe they are, but they don't use it.
Yeah, if you have guests, it takes some setup time. But that's true with Skype as well, although I think more people are familiar with Skype probably than Google Hangouts.
Well, I think it's kind of telling if we use Skype to set up the Google Plus. So
we're going to call you on Skype and we'll tell you how to do this. that is a little telling. Yeah.
So we email the Skype handle and then they call us on Skype in a second, and then it takes 25 minutes for them to set up to get on the call. Yeah. So my question is, I know it's no simple solution to build something like this using Skype, but can you create the virtual Skypeosaurus kind of thing? What would you do?
So what he's talking about is the way we handle it. If we, I think a lot of people probably don't know what we do when I'm not on the radio. When on the radio, I don't have to worry about this stuff. But when we do the rest of the week, we do internet-based television shows, and a lot of our participants are in other geographic locations. So we'll Skype them. But what happens? You know, it's fine if it's just me and another person on Skype. If it's you and Howard, easy, right? But if it's you, Howard, and somebody else, or you, Howard, and two other people, then it gets more complicated. The ideal way to do this is for each of you to have your own Skype connection, and then for me at this end to, you know, collate all of those as if each is a separate camera on a video switching system, and that's, in fact, what we do. We're going to take a break. I'll come back and maybe give you some better solutions coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by our buddies at LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom is technology that empowers people to create their own business, to get the legal work that you need to have done at affordable rates. And I know that because in 2005, when it was time to start TWIT, I asked my friend Kevin Rose, who had started many businesses even by then, what to do. He said, you need to do an LLC. LegalZoom.com walks you through the process step by step. You check the boxes. We're still operating under the same, what was it, $99 LLC that I bought in 2005. It works. And I didn't need to have a $250 an hour attorney to do it. LegalZoom.com is not just LLCs. It's corporations, S-Corp, C-Corp. It's home stuff too, like wills, trusts. It's personalized, affordable legal protection. LegalZoom is not a law firm. LegalZoom helps you do the legal paperwork that you can do by yourself for a very affordable rate. Trademark, $169 plus governmental filing fees. Last will and testaments from $69. And I love this. They've added this since I've used them. You can get legal advice from an experienced attorney at a pre-negotiated flat rate, which I really love. You can find the attorney in your state. Look at the reviews, the profiles. Pick the one that's right for you. Get an LLC, a DBA, incorporate, form a nonprofit even. All of that, just $99. Wheels, trusts, LLC, trademarks, and more. LegalZoom will save you a lot of time and a pile of money on startup costs. Plus, get you good legal advice if you need it. LegalZoom.com. I want you to visit LegalZoom.com. And when you decide to buy, make sure you use the offer code TECHGUY. And you'll get $10 off. Just a little thank you for letting them know you heard about it on the Tech Guy show. LegalZoom.com. Offer code TECHGUY for $10 off. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I do need a foam guitar. Nathan Staton, our fabulous musical director, rocking us out here. We were talking to Svera in Oslo, Norway. This is kind of a little inside baseball, but it's I think it's kind of an intriguing use of technology. Colleen Kelly, who was our fabulous engineer in the early days of Twit, invented Skypeosaurus. The idea was we wanted multiple Skype callers, but we needed each of them to be on their own dedicated computer at our site. So we could switch to them, just like a computer would be like a camera. You need video in and out to do that. And we did it on cheap computers. There are programs, not Skype, that do this. Skype does it, but doesn't necessarily do it very well. Have you looked at Uvu?
No. I looked at a lot of programs.
Yeah, Uvu does this.
How do you spell that?
OOVOO.com. This allows you to have video conferences. It's cross-platform. It's easy. You'll still have to get people to install it, obviously. I think it's a little bit better than Google Hangouts.
That's cool.
I think the trick on Google Hangouts is ultimately going to be to use this new technology that Google is pushing called WebRTC. And we're looking at web – that's the back end for Google Hangouts. And we're looking at using WebRTC instead of Skype because – it's very programmable. It's browser based, so you can literally give a guest on your show a link, a URL, a website URL. They just go to that page, and suddenly they're seeing you, and you're seeing them.
Wow!
Yeah,
so that's what we want. That's what everybody says. Can I get the link, and there's no link.
Yeah, it's for Chrome and Firefox. Go to webrtc.org. If you know a friendly programmer, it's easy enough to write a little client or a web page that will do this. This is what we're really looking at.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that possible to do now?
Yes.
That's really, that's exactly what I want to do.
Yeah. It makes it so easy.
A platform.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. So basically, you'll have a web page. You say, go to this web page, and now you can see them, and they can see you. They'll have to have a camera and all of that. But
Why haven't you done this?
We're working on the software. We want customized software, and also we have a solution that works. That's the other reason. If I were starting from scratch today, this is what I'd be doing. But we've already got Skypeosaurus.
You would use Uvu, or would you use?
This is essentially
your own.
You could do either. I would use Google.
Okay.
So the idea is that Google. And this is all done in JavaScript. It is basically an open solution, and I think that's in the long run this is going to be better than Skype. The problem with Skype, of course, is that Microsoft owns it, and who knows where Skype's going to go. It's just a matter of time before they start putting ads in the middle of our show. You know, we're on Skype with somebody, and all of a sudden an ad pops up, and we don't control that. And that, I'm afraid of that happening. So I think that in the long run, WebRTC is going to be in our future. Sir, I'm going to check out your podcast. You do it with Howard Lindzen, Stocks and Scotch. Easy to find if you Google it. Good luck to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wirecast will do this. Untoward in our chat room is giving us a link to a Wirecast tutorial. That's fairly expensive software, but we use that as well as a way of doing multiple video windows. It's kind of complicated. Hey, let's get Chris Marquardt on the line, John. Would you got him? He's in black and white, but he's there. I think he prefers it. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. He is at chrismarquardt.com, and he joins us every week to talk about photography. How are you?
I am doing so good. Good to have you back.
Well, I got to tell you, you told me don't bring all those cameras. I was going to bring the GoPro Hero, the Tough Olympus point and shoot, the OMD.
What did you bring?
The 5D. I just brought the Olympus OMD.
Which is a good choice. It's a very good choice.
It's lightweight. It was simple. We didn't, you know, but here's one of the things I noticed. I was on vacation, in case you didn't know, in the Mediterranean. We went to Italy, Greece, Montenegro, Croatia, and Turkey. And one thing I noticed is how many tourists now are carrying digital SLRs?
Yes. Yes. Actually, I've read somewhere that digital SLRs are on the rise again. So they're competing against Micro Four Thirds, the mirrorless ones. But and I might be wrong there, but the last thing I saw is that the Micro Four Thirds are kind of going down again, and the number of DSLRs are going up again.
I mean, even things like the very expensive Canon 5D Mark III, which is, you know, we're talking $3,000 or $4,000 for a camera system. I was surprised. These are not pros. These are just obviously enthusiasts. But more and more enthusiasts are carrying around very big, expensive, professional-grade cameras.
Yeah, you know, the camera manufacturers do a really good job making you believe that you will be a really good photographer if you buy that one special, big, expensive camera. And that's marketing, right?
You mean you won't?
Well, you have some technical advantage for sure, but the creative side, the composition, all these kind of things will not really come from the camera. There's no little bell inside that tells you now, bing, take the picture now, it's looking good.
The bell curve is widened because there's those people. But now there's also a lot of people using iPads to take pictures. I was stunned how many people raising their iPads up and taking pictures.
Raising their iPads, and then they have this. Then they have the case above their head like a sun shield.
Or it's hanging off the bottom, swinging. It's crazy.
That.
Crazy. So anyway, what do you want to talk about this week?
We have an assignment to review. Mm. We had that open for several weeks, and it's about time that we talk about the loud assignment.
All right. So this is how it works. Chris gives us a topic. We take a picture a week. We upload it to our Flickr group, the Tech Guy group, and now we're going to review three of Chris's favorites.
Yes. It was interesting because a lot of people took it very literally, and they took pictures of a speaker or some things that are loud. But what I was hoping for, and some people got that, are pictures that are visually loud in some way that kind of scream at you visually. So I made a choice of three different pictures. The first one is by Florence Chan. It's called Familiar Alien. It's this. You might have seen the Chinese artist Ai Weiwei did his bicycles installation on the Nathan Phillips Square in Toronto. And it's one of these things where you see like thousands of bicycles and light shining through them. And the picture is just, if you look at the picture, it shows those bicycles stacked behind each other, lots of repetition there, the spokes, the light shining. It's like there's so much going on in this picture. So visually, it's really kind of screaming at you with a strong violet color.
And if you hadn't told me bicycles, I wouldn't have known. It's just geometric. It's purple.
Yes.
It's beautiful.
It's shapes, first of all. And then after a while, you notice that, those might actually be wheels of a bicycle. And then you don't really notice because there are so many of them, and the light is kind of bouncing off those steel frames in a kind of a... in an unusual way. So,
Lawrence, thank you. Spacey little cowgirl on the Flickr.
Yes. Then the next one is by Rick Reb. And again, one of those, my pet peeve, title DSC02234.jpg.
It's pretty.
I prefer
though.
Real titles. But it's one of those pictures. It shows a car, some obviously a loud car with a big engine, but also visually he used something that I'm not a super fan of, you know, the HD, over-the-top kind of HDR look that looks kind of like painterly almost. But in conjunction with the picture, it really screams at you. That picture screams at you.
It's loud.
It's loud. It's very loud. It's visually loud.
In every respect, it's loud. I like that. That's fun.
Yeah.
And the third one. Rick. Yes.
Yes. And the third one is by someone called Bodhi, and it's a theater picture. It's hard to explain. It's a gritty picture. Could almost be a black and white, but it's in color.
It looks like loud music.
It does, yes.
Hey, hang on, because we're going to take a break and come back, give you a new assignment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks to a little cowgirl, Spacey Little Cowgirl, Geek Dad Photos, and Bowmine are three photographers whose photos got picked in this month's assignment, Loud. Well done. And if you want to see all the photos, you can go to our Flickr group. It's flickr.com. and then search for the Tech Guy group. You should join that group because then you can see everything that's submitted. It's always a lot of fun, and you can participate. Now, every month, Chris gives us a new assignment. So, Chris, I know you've had some time to think about it. Do you have an assignment for us?
Yes, I do. So the last one was loud, and I thought just why not do the opposite, silent.
Oh.
It's another one of those concepts. People have to kind of wrap their mind around and maybe think outside the box. But we had a lot of screaming pictures that were visually very loud, and maybe we can find something along those lines.
I like that. Now, remember, this isn't a contest. It really, all it is a chance for, you know, to encourage you to take more pictures. We want new photos. You can upload as many as one a week. The way to do it is to take the picture. It doesn't matter what you use. A smartphone is just as good as a $3,000 digital SLR. But do take the picture illustrating the concept silent. Upload it to Flickr. Tag it silent so we know that this is for this particular month's assignment. And then add it to the Tech Guy group. It's a simple thing to do, and it's free. Once you do that, we'll have a whole bunch of them, and Chris will pick three in about a month to review on the air. No prize, no award, just a little bit of honor on the air if you get selected. And mostly, it's all about getting out there and taking photos. Chris is at discoverthetopfloor.com. And that's the place.
Brand new website there. New website.
Hey, that's great. What's your next photo workshop going to be?
Well, Iceland in 2013. So if anyone wants to, 2014, anyone wants to come in March 2014, we still have a couple of seats open there.
Photographers love Iceland.
Oh, it's beautiful there. I mean, everything I've seen, the lava beaches, the blue ice, the grottos, the original geyser is there. So that's where the name is from. And I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh,
it's going to be
that perfect. Sounds great. Well, I look forward to seeing the pictures.
Me too.
discoverthetopfloor.com to find out more. Thank you, Chris. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Fred and Torrance, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Fred.
Hello, Leo. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well. Actually, I'm going to be terminating my current service for obvious reasons. And taking on T-Mobile. Two questions. One, does both services have to be active in order to utilize Bluetooth? And question number two, can I transfer all stored data, including downloaded app programs, from the transmitting phone to the new phone?
Oh, I see. So you have two phones. And you want to use Bluetooth to connect the two phones?
Yeah, and take all the data from the phone that I'll be getting.
No. Well, it depends. The answer is it depends. For instance, it needs application support on the new phone and the old phone. On the Motorola X, for instance, which is what I use, Motorola has bundled a program in, a migration program, and designed to do that specifically. HTC does that as well. The Migrate program will let you pair to an existing phone and then move over text messages, call history, SIM contacts, media, not everything, but just some critical settings and so forth. But that, and it does it via Bluetooth, but it does need to exist on the new phone and the old phone. So it depends what phone you get, I guess, is the answer. Bluetooth is generally not used as much for file transfer as it is used for audio. There's a number of Bluetooth profiles, but the Bluetooth headset profile, so that you can use it in your car or with a Bluetooth headset, and the Bluetooth audio profile, which allows you to play music from your Bluetooth device to a speaker in your car.
I'll be switching from a Huawei phone to a Nokia Lumia 521.
Yeah, I don't think that you can do that. I think you need a computer in between. Yeah. Now Windows Phone does, I think, have some similar solution. Maybe the chat room can help me, because I do remember there was a Migrate feature on Windows Phone. You know, the best, I don't know about the Huawei. I don't even know what a Huawei phone is. If the Huawei phone, if you can use SkyDrive on the Huawei phone, you can get all your files into SkyDrive, and then the Windows phone will automatically load those. But I think the biggest problem is going to be getting stuff off the Huawei, whatever that is. Wow. Oh, you mean Huawei. Maybe Huawei. That's what he means. the Chinese company. You know what? That's a better pronunciation. We should call it Huawei. From now on, we're calling it Huawei. Yeah, I don't know what the Huawei is. Android, I think. You know, here's a way to do it. Dropbox. Dropbox should work, right? Doesn't Windows Phone support Dropbox? So you could put Dropbox on your Huawei and put all the files you wanted to save using a file manager into the Dropbox, and then put Dropbox on your Windows Phone and copy it over. Something like that. Bluetooth is not the right answer, I don't think. John in Encinitas, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. Great to talk to you. I really appreciate your show. And the question I have concerns my Nexus 7.
Yeah.
And I'm trying a strategy. I don't know how effective it might be. But given that there are only, as you said like an hour ago, 500 recharges in a...
lithium ion, yeah.
Right. What happens when I use a weak adapter that I found that used to be used on a cell phone, when I use that to charge my Nexus 7, what I'm trying to do is this. I'm trying to use the Nexus 7 while it's, quote, charging,
right,
unquote, and knowing that because I'm using this anemic charger, it's actually charging, you know, just a few percent over
a little bit.
Hours.
Right, right.
So, and you'd mentioned in that other conversation that a partial charge,
right,
it only counts partially toward that 500.
Right.
So will this give me the ability to use my battery over several years using
this
weak charger?
Yes, the best way to keep a lithium-ion battery going forever is to keep it charged. So the advice, by the way, there's a huge variety of advice about lithium ion. And I am trusting, I think, some very good sources to give you this information. I believe this to be the most scientifically accurate information. One, lithium ion batteries, if you're going to use them like on a laptop, best to keep it plugged in all the time. Because if it doesn't discharge, it doesn't count.
Okay.
Now, it's not because it's weak or strong. I mean, I would use a charger that came with an Nexus 7, but if you once you charge it up 100%, as long as it stays 100%, you're not discharging it. You're not using up any of the lithium ion. So that's one. Number two, for storage, 50% is ideal if it's long-term storage. You know, get it to 50%. And then finally, yes, you have a certain number of charge cycles. A half charge counts half a cycle. A full charge counts a full cycle.
Okay. Now, the only thing is that I've read that you don't want to keep it at the 4.2 maximum voltage for a long period of time because either the anode or the cathode starts plating, you know, with metal lithium. But what I'm trying to do.
No, to my knowledge, that's not true because there's circuitry in these devices to prevent that.
Oh, okay.
So don't worry about the three things I told you are the only three things that count. You'll hear things about, quote, reconditioning lithium ion batteries. No such thing. That comes from the old days of nickel metal hydride and NiCads. From what I've been told,
yes.
And again, there seems to be a lot of varied information on this. Those are the three things and nothing else matters. And I know that people think otherwise, so
All right.
You're going to have to take it with this is what Leo says. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk. I don't know. I sound like the Cowardly Lion or something. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, cell phones, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Today it's troubleshooting day, isn't it? People are having all sorts of trouble with their stuff. And I'm here to help. So is Heather Hammond, our phone ranger. Heather, who should I conversate with next here?
We should speak with Brandon in Springfield.
If you say so, I'm all in. Hello, Brandon in Springfield. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. My stomach doesn't feel very good right now, but...
Oh, well, don't throw up on me, okay?
I won't. It's not that bad.
Turn your head. Throw up on Heather. So, what can I do for you, Brandon?
I have an iPod, and, you know, the iOS 7 update came out, and I checked my settings in software update, and I haven't got the update yet.
Yeah, you may. What version iPod? Is it iPod Touch?
It's an iPod, yeah.
And what generation do you even know?
I think when I got it, iOS 4 was preloaded on it.
Yeah, it probably isn't compatible. So it's just an older device, so you won't get iOS 7, and that's good because you don't want iOS 7 on it because it isn't probably powerful enough to handle it.
Yeah, that makes
sense. Yeah. So if it doesn't offer it to you and you check the software update, it probably means it's just not compatible. Don't worry about it. The only issue, and I don't think it's going to be an issue, would be if at some point applications come out and say, requires iOS 7. And I don't think that's going to be an issue yet.
That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, well, it might happen someday. This is, unfortunately, the downside, the dark side of the Apple universe is that this happens more than it does on the Windows side. And in the world of Windows, Microsoft was determined that if it ran on Windows, of any version of Windows, it should continue to run forever. Apple is much more the opposite. They say, hey, no, we got the new operating system, so you should be upgrading. And by the way, if you need new hardware, then you should be buying new hardware. So the only iPod Touch, I'm told by Dagdog in our chat room, that works with iOS 7 is the most recent, the fifth generation. Anything older, don't worry about it. There may come a day where an app you want to use requires iOS 7, but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you'll either have to get a new iPod Touch or not use that app.
Huh.
Happens. By the way, you know, if you have, what you run into is, for instance, you can't update it because you need the new iTunes, and you can't get the new iTunes if you have a new version of OS X on your Macintosh. It is conceivable, and I've seen it happen to people, that in order to update the iPod Touch, they had to buy a new computer. That's crazy. That's crazy talk. But that frankly only happens in the Apple world. It doesn't really happen in any other world. I wouldn't worry about it, Brandon. I think you're going to be okay. By the time you need iOS 7, you'll be getting an iPhone.
Yeah.
Are the folks considering that, getting you an iPhone?
No.
You got to work on them. That'll be your excuse, Brandon. Think of it this way. Mom, Dad, I can't play Doodle Jump anymore. I need an iPhone. Won't that work? No? You don't think that'll convince them? Don't say Doodle Jump then. Say, oh, my homework helper won't work. I need a new iPhone. That'll do it. Hey, nice to have you listening. Thank you, Brandon. Phyllis, Springfield, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. I only have a laptop. I don't have one of those iPhones or tablets or anything, because all I mainly do is just email and I play games and I have different programs, you know, that I have on bookmarks. I have Google IG as my homepage.
And it's
been counting down, telling me. Well, so what do I need to do? Because I didn't think I had anything important enough to back up, but I don't want to lose all my bookmarks things for my stations and everything. So what do I do? I mean, when it goes off, does that mean everything's going to be blank and gone?
Yeah. You'll go to iGoogle, and in 19 days, you go to iGoogle, and it will say nope.
How do I get my bookmarks and things transferred over? Do I have to just put them all back in, write them all down, and put them all back in on another browser?
What are you? What kind of bookmarks do you have?
Well, it's like your station, and
okay, so it's radio station bookmark. And here's the thing: iGoogle was a homepage thing from Google. I use it. I loved it. And you were able to add these little modules, or they call them gadgets. And each of them has different capabilities. So it's kind of dependent on the gadget that you've got. If that gadget has if you go to the settings and it has an export or something like that, then you could export it out. But if it doesn't, you might have to write them down. I'm going to suggest that instead of Google, you go to my.yahoo.com.
Okay, because I have Yahoo as my where I get my email and
so
and stuff like that.
My Yahoo is, I like iGoogle better because it didn't have ads and stuff. But
yeah,
but my Yahoo is very similar. There's other ones like it. NetVibes is another one. You know, it'd be cool if one of these guys would come along and say, hey, we're going to import all of your iGoogle settings and stuff. But I don't know if anybody's doing that. Protopage.com is another one. Okay. So NetVibes, Protopage. I love all of these. The idea is they're like kind of a front page to your browser that has all the stuff that you use in it, right?
Yeah, okay, that's what I was concerned about. I didn't know, because I'm a little stupid, evidently. I didn't know if it meant that everything was going to be gone and it was going to be a blank page, because every day I turn it on, they tell me you got so many more.
I know. I know.
And I thought, well, I don't really understand it, so I better be trying to find out. And I've been trying for 3 different days. I realized last week when I was listening and kept trying, the phone was busy. You were on vacation.
Yeah, so I apologize.
No, that's okay, because I knew you were going. I just didn't, you know, realize. But anyway, so yesterday I tried and tried and tried, and I thought, well, it's kind of a stupid question.
No,
anyway,
it's a great question.
I'm
going over to my.yahoo.com, and I see up in the upper right-hand corner something interesting. It says, iGoogle user, import your settings.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I was just on, well, I wasn't going to my Yahoo, but I had went from my Yahoo Mail, and I didn't see anything on there because I went to my other page first, and it said you got, you know, 19 days or whatever, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to try to call and see where I go from there.
Well, there's good news. So I didn't know this, but iGoogle does let you export your settings into a file on your computer, and once you've done that, you can upload it. It's a file that's a .xml file. Once you've done that, you can upload it to My Yahoo, and as best it can, My Yahoo will duplicate the functionality. Now, here's the good news. Probably when you're talking about bookmarks, those are just the browser bookmarks, and those are not tied to iGoogle. They won't go away.
Oh, okay.
Those are probably okay. But I would still, just in case, I would still go to iGoogle and scroll to the bottom of the page and click the export button just to make sure that if you needed to, you could go to My Yahoo or something similar. And so it's apparently I didn't know this, and maybe this is something they've added. There's an export button somewhere here. I don't see it. But,
I was going to say, because just a couple of days ago, they updated My Yahoo page, and you have new themes and different. It's all different now on their page. When I go to My
they're
Yahoo
probably
mail.
They're probably trying to get the iGoogle folks over there.
Oh, well,
Google says hardly anybody used iGoogle, so Google does this. They're pretty ruthless about killing stuff that's not, you know, really big. Anyway, there's your solution. I'm glad you listened, Phyllis. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to Avis in Santa Ana. Hi, Avis. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi there, Leo.
Hey.
You stand another basic, generic question about tablets and whatever.
You bet. That's what I'm here for.
Good. I'm glad, because I feel silly calling in about it, but I know you've talked about it a million times to others on the air, but I wasn't ready to buy, so I listened with half an ear. So here I am back.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Great. As a photographer, I would like a tablet, a nice wide screen tablet, to show my work and carry it around easily, and an actual keyboard rather than the virtual ones. Of course, I'd want to be able to take credit cards, have merchant services, portable, and it has flash because some of my stuff.
I was so sure I had your answer until you said that.
Uh-oh.
Don't get rid of the flash, and then you've got a good answer.
Oh, really?
No, there's no good. Well, you can get, you know, any. The iPads do not support flash. And right up till the point where you said it has to support flash, the iPad is an obvious choice. It is going to be the best-looking screen, and I think that's important because you want the colors to be accurate. You want high resolution and so forth. There are numerous companies that make add-ons, hardware keyboard add-ons, for the iPad, and there are a number of ways to pay, my favorite being Square, which is a little dongle, and you'll see it everywhere because this is very popular, that plugs into the audio port on the iPad, and then you just swipe the credit card, and it's got a great interface, and it's a great way to pay.
I agree. I've seen that. And yeah. That's a wonderful thing to have.
Now when you see, if you have to have Flash, then I'm going to have to send you to a Windows tablet.
Okay. Well, I'll write down both of your suggestions and...
Because even on Android, you know, Flash is deprecated. Adobe says we're not going to make it anymore. You can get it on there. It doesn't work that well. You're going to want a Surface tablet. Now, Microsoft, in 3 days, is going to update its Surface tablet to the new Surface 2. Okay. And that's probably the one I would look at. It will have Flash. It's got a good screen. It's going to be more expensive. I think the iPad is the best choice. So you're saying one at your website. This is unfortunately the case. A lot of the sites that are aimed at photographers have Flash on the sites. And I think personally, if I were you, I'd get rid of it because it doesn't work on any of your clients that have iPhones or iPads.
Good point. Yeah.
So you're not, you know, it's not just you, it's your customers.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
So look for a new provider for your website is what I would do. Or most likely, if you have a good one, they're going to be thinking about this too, because Flash is the end of the world. It's over.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Then, okay.
You mean Flash, you mean Flash software, the animating software on websites, not Compact Flash.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. I love the Nexus 7, by the way. Very inexpensive, beautiful tablet, great screen. It's a different, you know, it's wide and long. And since most of, I would expect that as a photographer, most of your pictures are 4x3, not 16x9, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, so the iPad is 4:3. And so I think a 4:3 aspect ratio will give you full bleed on your pictures. And that's important. On a Nexus 7, you'll have black bars on the left and the right.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
See, now
I wouldn't have considered that.
Yeah, well,
that's important.
Yeah.
What would you suggest? I've got a dumb phone, and it's still smarter than I am. I like its size. It's small. It clips onto my waistband. It doesn't get in the way, you know. But it seems to me the newer phones, the smartphones with the bigger screens.
Oh, they're great.
Slippery. You know, I'm just talking about ergonomics, I guess.
I know. You know what's, you know, of course, the reason they're slippery is because it turns out for a phone, metal is bad. It doesn't let the antenna work. And so they're mostly made of plastic, and it's slippery.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's an interesting thing what Samsung's done, and this might be the phone to look at, the Galaxy Note 3. They've got a pleather back slit with actual stitches, and so it's not slippery. It's got more texture on it. It's attractive, and for a photographer, it might be a good choice because this is almost a tablet.
Yeah, I was wondering, do I get both, one,
My mom loves her Galaxy Note because it has a stylus, and she can sketch and draw. I don't know if you do any of that stuff.
No, I don't.
But you could use it perhaps to annotate your pictures, show them, and make notes on them. I don't know. If you get an iPad, you probably should get an iPhone because it's the same software. It works the same. It'll be like a little bitty iPad.
I see. In other words, the iPad does about everything the iPhone does except make phone calls.
Right.
Okay.
And it's bigger.
Yeah, right.
And that's not an insignificant difference.
Yeah, true.
When the iPad first came out and we hadn't tried it yet, people said, it's just going to be like an iPhone on steroids, just a big screen iPhone. But there's something happens when you get to that bigger screen. It just changes your experience of it.
I agree.
Yeah.
100%. I know it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, there are lots of choices, and then stuff's not... The Surface might well be a good solution for you. I don't know. I think Windows is overkill for what you want to do.
Okay. Wonderful.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much, Leo.
Something to think about. My pleasure. Thank you, Avis. Take care.
All right. Take care.
All right. Yeah, it's somebody in the chat room says, you're so biased. Why don't you recommend Surface? Yeah, I admit it. I'm a little biased against Surface. I don't like it at all. I haven't seen the new Surface. Maybe it'll be better. The Surface is really a laptop. Posing as a tablet. Yes, you could attach the keyboard, but it's so big and thick and ungainly. I don't really think using it as a tablet is very satisfying. I really feel like it's a laptop. Now, maybe a laptop is the right solution. I'm not sure. I think a note is a really is. I mean, the iPad is a really good way to go. I do. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you disagree, you can call. We'll get you on. We'll get to responsible viewpoints from opposing listeners. Will be welcome at 888-827-5536. And also, by the way, you can visit our website, techguylabs.com. We put all the questions and answers up there, audio and video, text as well, and you are welcome to comment and give us your opinion. So if you have a solution that you think would be right for Avis, techguylabs.com. I'd love to get your thoughts. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More of your calls right after this. I used to do it on the radio show all the time, up on all the acronyms that people would use in texts and IMing and stuff. Then there's so many new ones now, I feel like I've kind of lost track. So YOLO, you only live once, right? You only live once. I see SMH a lot, and I had to look that up. It shakes my head. Shake my head. So I'm shaking my head, SMH. There's a new one that I like a lot called FOMO, F-O-M-O. Have you seen that one?
I don't think I have.
It's short for fear of missing out.
Oh.
So I have FOMO a lot when I see all my friends at Comic-Con or something. I go, oh, I got FOMO. I'm missing out.
I will never experience that.
You don't have any fear of missing out, or you just not interested in comics?
Because I'm the center of
You're the center of it. You're for your universe.
Of the fun. No.
You never miss anything.
Fun's where I am.
It's wherever you are. That, of course, is right. I think part of this is because of hashtags on Twitter.
Oh, right.
They're because of hashtags, these have proliferated. We have acronym proliferation, or AP, as I'm calling it. 8888 Ask Leo. Jonathan in Los Angeles. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
What can I do for you, my friend?
All right. Well, I am a master's student in music, and I'm putting on a recital in November.
Neat. What is your instrument?
I'm actually studying choral conducting, so it's a choir and orchestra concert.
That's great. I was just talking with a violinist. He was the first chair violinist in the Budapest Symphony. He said, I loved violin. I studied violin. Then I realized the guy who gets all the money is the guy who stands up in front and waves his hands. So being the conductor is a good thing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So you play the baton. So what can I do for you?
Well, I'm trying to think of ways for my audience to interact on their smartphone. So far, what I already have set up is I have all my scores in Dropbox, and I'm going to hand out a brochure, basically, of QR codes that they can scan with their smartphones and follow along during the concert if they want to.
So this is mind-blowing. This is mind-boggling. Even concerts have changed. So they can scan the QR code and then they can see the lyrics and sing along. No, you don't want them to sing.
No, it'll actually be like full scores, like anything that's like orchestra, they can like follow that along too.
Wow.
And,
what a great idea. And that's just you're cobbling that up yourself because it's just Dropbox codes.
Yeah. I had two other ideas and I'd love to hear anything else. My two other ideas were, one, setting up some kind of mobile chat room where people can just like talk and analyze stuff together while they're there. And the other thing was like maybe setting up some kind of, and I don't know how you would do this, but maybe set up some kind of like text service where they can text in comments about the music they're listening to that'll get timestamped. And then later on, I can see what pieces they were talking about, maybe overlay that over the recording or something along those lines.
Wow. Is this a new degree field where you're, social media plus choral conducting? It's a new multidisciplinary degree.
No, but my undergrad was in music technology, so I've always wanted to do stuff like that.
I really like this. So there are, of course, commercial services, and you see this at rock concerts. You know, text hashtag Rolling Stones and whatever. You know who the person, the group that is the most hip on this is called Umphrey's McGee. Have you ever heard of them?
I have heard of them.
They're wonderful. They're a jam band, you know, in the tradition of the Grateful Dead. They're a great band, but they don't have a record contract. They have just figured out all the different ways to make livings as a band, and it's a large band. By selling, you can get a USB key of the concert as you walk out the door. You can text requests to the band, and they'll see them in real time, and all of this stuff. But all of that is these are commercial services that are going to cost you money. So I think the best way to do this is to use Twitter.
Okay.
Use Twitter. What I want you to do is wear a T-shirt with a hashtag. You know, it could be hashtag David or Jonathan Sings. Whatever.
I actually have a hashtag going already for it, and I'm eventually going to ask people that when they post pictures on Twitter or Facebook to use the hashtag so I can go back and collect them later.
Perfect. So the hashtag is the solution. And let me explain, because we were talking about hashtags. What a hashtag really, in my mind, it is. It's a saved search. It's that simple. So a hashtag is the number sign and followed by text. You don't want to have it too long because then people have to type it each time. It should be something short but sweet. But something unique, obviously. And when that is added to a tweet or put in a tag on a picture or used on a web page or wherever, it makes it very easy to search for that. On Twitter, in fact, if you just click a hashtag, Twitter built this in once. My friend Chris Messina is the guy who thought this all up. He did it first on Twitter. In fact, Twitter didn't know anything about it, and then they realized this has taken off, and they added this capability to click a hashtag link, and it in effect does a search on Twitter for everything else that has that hashtag in it. That really is going to be of huge value to you, and it's simple because people don't have to do anything special, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they see like the Twitter app, and they're good to go.
Everybody's got that. So just say, you know, tweet me your requests, your thoughts, your feedback, your pictures. Use the hashtag John's Concert, whatever it is, and you'll be able to find it. And then tell them, hey, if you post pictures on Flickr, make sure you use this hashtag and I'll find it. And on and on and on. I mean, hashtags are very, I think, kind of a brilliant insight into how stuff works. And I think it's very useful.
Cool.
Yeah, and that way you don't have to pay, because you can get the specialized short code for SMS, but you have to pay a service provider, and it's not cheap to do that. You don't want to do that.
No.
But now, let me think. If they don't have Twitter, and they want to send you a text, I'm going to think about that. That's where it's of value. You're sitting in a concert, you've got your phone, and you could text a short code with your thoughts. I'm trying to think of how you could do that. I don't know of an easy way to do that, but... the problem is it's going to cost you money. Everybody has Twitter, right? Everybody in your audience will have Twitter.
Yeah, well, maybe not some of the professors, but that's...
all those old guys.
Yeah.
Hashtags, you know where hashtags really... Tell the old guys, well, you remember AOL keywords? It's just like that, only there's a number sign in front. AOL really deserves credit. They kind of invented this, the keyword on AOL, right?
Yeah.
You don't remember that. It's a long time ago. Hey, Jonathan, that's exciting. Good luck with your concert.
Cool. Thank you so much.
I love this. I think this is a great idea. And I think hashtags are really the simplest way to solve this issue. The one thing is, if somebody doesn't have a Twitter account they can use it on Facebook too, by the way. You know, they don't have an account on Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook. All of them support hashtags. They just, you know, have a dumb phone and they can text message. I'm not sure what the best way would be to do that. Maybe I got an idea. Set up a Google Voice number. That's free, right? You can just get a dedicated number and say, and if you don't have Twitter, Facebook, or anything else, you can always text me at this number. And then those will all come into your Google Voice mailbox. That's the way to do it. Hey, really fun. I love that. Really love that. 8888 Ask Leo. David's in Hollywood. Hello, David. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. This is David in Los Angeles. What a pleasure to be on the radio with you. I'm a first-time caller, and I have a kind of serious question. This is in regards going back to data stored in the local hard drive.
All right, hang on a second. We got to take a break. Serious question next on The Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, the last segment of the show this week. Holy cow. For our friends listening in Southern California, of course, the show is on KFI, our mothership. That's where The Tech Guy Show originated in 2004. And Bill Handel, their morning guy there, has invited me to make a regular appearance once again on that show. So I'm going to do that. I think every Friday, listen for The Tech Guy on Bill Handel. I'll let you know the time and so forth. But good news. I'm happy about that. We're talking to David in Hollywood before the break. He said, with a serious question. So, what is your serious question?
Well, this is what happened. I was in the process of setting up a second RAID, and I had about 1,200 gigabytes of data. I'm a filmmaker, and so I was keeping films and other raw files in a storage hard drive within the local computer that I use, workstation. And so I called my tech support to assist me to create the second RAID and to mirror onto a second drive, hard drive, all of the information. But I asked them really clearly, you know, not to do anything wrong that would erase my data.
Uh-oh.
Because at that point, the computer had faltered and repairs had to be done, so I had no chance to extract the data.
See, this is always a problem when you bring in a computer for repairs. Frequently, even if it's your own IT guys, it comes back empty. Is that what happened?
Well, the data was there.
Okay.
It was a remote from a sort of assistance.
Yeah.
And what happens is that he forgot to migrate the RAID, and he just created. So I think the header got erased, and now the data is nowhere to be found. And apparently, it is retractable. And so I had to wait. I had to fight my way up to get the company to be responsible for the liability of retrieving my data, which is going to cost them a lot of money. And but now that they accepted the company that they contracted with. Have you ever heard of this company, ACE Data Recovery, which is located in Texas?
I have not. So if I'm understanding this correctly, you had data on a RAID array, and they rebuilt the RAID array, which of course means the data's disappeared.
No, it's nothing to do with rebuilding. No, it was not about the hard drive that crashed or anything. The computer itself had other issues. They were fixed. At this point, it was just to create a second RAID.
Okay. Well, whatever. You lost the data. I don't know the name of this company, but I think if that's what they're if they're willing to stand behind it, which sounds like they ought to, since it sounds like they screwed up, I don't know what to say except good luck. Robert and Castaic, Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. Hey, Robert.
Hi, Leo.
What can I do for you?
I have the HTC One, and I set up my Yahoo account on it as an IMAP account, and it worked fine.
Good.
But then later I decided to switch it to a POP. I deleted the account, and I wanted to set up as a POP because I wanted to keep my copies on the server.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's the other way around. IMAP keeps your copies on the server. POP, normally, unless you set it not to, will delete your copies from the server.
Oh, really? Because on IMAP, when I delete on my phone, it also...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, so you want a local copy that you can delete locally but keep it on the server. IMAP keeps it... And IMAP is paired, so when you delete it once, it deletes it everywhere. I got it. Okay, all right, I got
Correct.
It.
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, my problem is when I try to set up as a POP, it comes back and says my password or my email. It says authentication failed. It won't let me set up as a POP.
Yeah.
But I can go back and... do the same thing as IMAP, and it works.
I'm not sure what the POP... You make sure you got the right POP server settings, right?
Yeah.
For Yahoo Mail, it needs SSL. So you have to make sure it's on port 995, right?
Yes, it is.
The mail server is pop.mail.yahoo.com. You did that right, right?
Correct.
All right. Then I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I can't remember if you have.
I thought maybe. Yeah, go ahead.
Pop server setting. I'm trying to think.
I was thinking maybe once you set up as IMAP, maybe it doesn't let you do it as POP.
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think so. I can't think of what be going on there. Make sure, go into your Yahoo Mail and make sure the settings are correct there. Maybe POP is not enabled. Not sure. Love that HTC One. That's a nice phone. But I don't think this has anything to do with that. It sounds to me like it's a Yahoo configuration issue. Make sure you got an authentication turned on. It does require SSL. It does have to be port 995. Yahoo's got all the settings on their website if you want to check it up. And it should work. According to Yahoo, it should. According to Yahoo, it should. Earl in Lakeside, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Earl.
Yeah, Leo, thanks for taking my call. I have an iMac at home, and I have a Samsung Note 2 for my phone. I use Gmail, and some of the Gmail will only go to my phone and will not go to the house, to the Mac. And when I try to print them, it says Samsung will only print to a Samsung printer. I don't know why it only goes to the phone and not the iMac.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Must be a difference in the configuration. When you access Gmail on your desktop, are you doing it in the web browser as webmail, or are you doing it some other way?
Well, I have the Gmail account.
You just go to your browser. Okay, so what you're seeing on your Mac is the definitive view of your Gmail. So everything should be there. You know, I don't know. I would guess that this is going back to that same problem we had earlier in the day with another caller. Gmail's changed its filtering setup. They now have this priority, maybe they call it important. I can't remember. They've changed it all around. And it's by, apparently, I guess they're turning it on people. Initially, you had to ask for it. They had this primary social promotions updates, these new folders. My guess is that's turned on your desktop, but not on your phone. Or vice versa, maybe. Maybe you're using the Gmail app on your phone and it's turned on there, but not on your desktop. So here's what you do. I think this will solve it. Is under on your desktop in the gear, go to settings and that gear icon on the right there and choose configure inbox. This is this new inbox. Make sure that it's turned, well, if you don't like it, turn it off on both your phone and your desktop. I would turn it on. I like it. And make sure it's turned on both. And then at least your desktop and your phone will match. My suspicion is the mail is there. In other words, it's just in a folder you didn't expect it to be in. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, thanks for joining us. Have a great geek week. Bye, Heather. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.